confident that again for ease of reference, we'll make a round of introduction and from there we'll come to the discussion of the day. My name is Fred Bonner. I am the chairperson of the Commerce Committee. Can we move on to you, Madam?
Morning, Honourable Member Thabo Gazi, acting Deputy Director General, Member of the Ministry.
Good morning, Member Sam Michael Weber, Chief Director, Member of the Ministry.
I was saying that, therefore, we always try to keep our eyes wide open and our ears closer to the ground. Through the department, the acting DG, we came across some reports in the Sunday newspaper, particularly in the Sunday Times. The front page. Some reports to do with some developments in the mining industry. that also continued in yesterday's newspaper, where there is a reported arrangement being entered into regarding the mining assets in Asa Naka ASA, and it has to do with LINDEP, which is the Reform Board Development Agency, it has to do with other role players that are mentioned in the newspaper. Our concern in that development is based on mainly three issues. One is we believe that the stake in question is owned by the state, and therefore this deal is an attempt to dispose of those state assets in Asa Naka. And we understand that there is a cabinet decision, moved by itself in the department, calling for a moratorium on the disposal of the state-owned assets in mining industry until such a time that there is absolute clarity on the moves and the attempts to establish the state-owned mining company. Now, our question is, on what basis is this transaction taking place in the face of that cabinet decision? The second issue to that is, when we read what is reported in the newspapers, which we don't know, we're dependent on you as the people who are responsible to regulate in the industry, we discover that the community, mining community in that area, seems to be at the receiving end. Reports are to the effect that they are only benefiting to the amount of about 5% of the total deal that is being discussed. And indeed, that flies in the face of our attempt, stated openly on Jesse, that we would want to ensure that communities, particularly mining communities, do derive reasonable benefits from mining activities. And we want to know, it concerns us, if it is true that they are only going to benefit 5% out of the whole deal, if the deal is allowed by the department. But also we want to get to know, because this seems to be happening in one of our key industries, in the chrome industry. And we just want to get to understand who is Asa Naka, because there's also reports of it being foreign owned, particularly owned by China. And we need to then unpack this. If you have a knowledge, if you've seen this report, we'd be grateful if you would throw some light so that we can understand those developments, so that then we are able to take aid as people who are responsible for the oversight. So I thought that let's take this moment just to reflect on this issue, to get your responses in terms of whether you have knowledge or not on this matter, and then we can take it forward. Can I hand it over to you, Mr.
Chairman? Thanks, Chairman, and the Honourable Member. I think I'll ask Mr. Mabuza to comment on the aspect and the dimension that he's been following very closely and the policy sector.
Thank you,
Chief.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We have indeed advanced the memo to cabinet seeking a moratorium on disposal of the mining assets until such time that the audit has been completed and a further directive from cabinet is given. We are at the advanced stage of that process. When we discovered of the original intent of LIMDEV to dispose the 80%, we, as the department, communicated to them, informing them of the moratorium that is in place. It is a process now that is outside of the department because any disposal of state mining assets or exception to the moratorium would have to be approved by cabinet, not the Department of Mineral Resources. We are not aware as to whether the said company and institution agency has sought that approval from the cabinet, but that is the process as far as we know. Something that attached to mine and is in out there, maybe it's in the cabinet. I don't think that the answer would be the matter is in the cabinet. Actually, we want to know about the matter because it's new to us. When you read that article, it also name some other people. I mean the sanitary. So we want to know so that when we go there, Chairperson, as the people from this committee, we go there with the full idea, with the full knowledge that no, what is happening here is 1, 2, 3. But now I can't say when the people ask, what are you doing in mining committee about this? I said, no, this matter is in this with the cabinet. No, I think to us, I don't think that is the answer that he must give to us. He must just, we need the explanation. He must explain. No, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So because of that, we take the matter to the cabinet. Then I'm clear now. I can go face the public with a very clear knowledge that what is happening to mining is 1, 2, 3. Because this thing has happened, it's go out on the Sunday times. And it also go out in yesterday. So it means that it has an impact. People or community want to know, public want to know what is happening. So I'm in the community, I must know. I tell you, Chair.
I recognize Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Jekta, Honorable Fonto.
Thank you, yes, Mr. Chair. It's exactly the issue which we raised last week. That is, there are very prominent people who are benefiting to the value of millions. Exactly the point. And, you know, our words weren't even concluded. You find the Sunday Times newspaper saying certain guys benefit. Now, you know, it comes back to what the department has to do eventually. Well, it probably runs when the question is limited. Is it a provincial agency? Because if so, cabinet has more or less influence over LIMDEV being an agency involved in provincial government. But I'm sure the cabinet decision will probably be able to bind provincial government, which would need to be a guiding factor towards provincial government. But I'm not sure whether LIMDEV is an independent structure. Probably a provincial government agency. That's what I'd say. It's probably first line of reporting is to the Limpopo provincial government within that framework, if I understand correctly. The other thing which I do find a bit disturbing is it or doesn't approve or just basically doesn't deal with the matter, because
I'll try to read this and speak of it, but I want that question up front and answer to it. There's another political committee which also made the headlines this weekend. A presentation was made to that committee with the option of nationalizing the technology credit. Productive farmer was not mentioned by the department in presenting it to that committee. And I can see why members of parliament get a bit irate when certain important issues are not dealt with in the committee, and we find that out in the newspaper. I mean, that's inexcusable. So my question is, as directly as that, is there any talk of this, by this department, of any option, any document in that direction?
Thank you, Honourable Jackson. I thank the department. I would imagine that it would be difficult for them to respond in full. We just ask the question now. It doesn't seem to be working. Is that better? I was saying that I imagine it would be difficult for them to answer all of these facts now, but could we not just request that they actually find out and come back and give a report to the committee? Because I think everybody's concerned about this issue. And as the Honourable Member said, we need to get all the information possible. I mean, we are aware that it's a provincial development agency, but the mining rights are still the same as anywhere else in the country. So the department does have some jurisdiction over it, at least in that sense of the word.
Thank you, Honourable Fondo.
Person on that same vein, really, I must register that I was not happy with the answer. It was for a department understanding that there's an activity with an intent to dispose the mine. I mean, definitely, there are questions not necessarily from the committee. The committee would be very, very much interested, but the public out there has got a lot of questions that the department might be expected to answer. Whether it's a provincial competence or whatever, but the department definitely is expected to answer. If the department doesn't have answers now, as the previous member has said, the matter is very, very urgent for the committee to have information around that activity in that particular aspect. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to bring this up later because I received this invitation to nationalize the mining. In fact, it will take place on the 30th and 31st.
What invitation is that, sir?
There's an invitation I just got by email when I left the office, which talked about nationalizing and some of the privacy reasons. And I thought I was going to bring it up later, but I think it was the same issue. But going further than that, is that the whole idea of reversing the mineral rights to the state, what it protects for the world. But it somehow is a state fight. Because the initial mining rights are given to a particular company which fulfill all the requirements of government and the community. Now, but when they dispose of them again, that's where the problem comes. Because I don't think we are very clear what happens there. We need to tighten up that loophole.
Honourable
Machida. Thank you, Chairperson. Also calling on the name of who are not satisfied about the response. I just want to know, as a department, with the cabinet and the minister, what is the relationship between the minister and the department? Because I think if this thing happens day, right? How are we relating? The department, the committee, and the minister.
Let's give you an opportunity to respond, and we will then entertain the proposals made by Honorable Member for the report.
Thanks, Jefferson, and the Honorable Member. We note the concerns of the committee, and up front, I just need to say that we are here to present to the committee to discuss the document, and this matter is, yes, it's important. And the questions that are raised, we may not have the specific details because we didn't come, you know, sort of prepared to we're going to give the response that we are able to, and if there's need for further information, we commit to going back and look for the information. However, I want to clarify the process, and I think when I hear the Honourable Member's responses on Mr. Mabuza's response, he was not saying that this request is in cabinet. He's saying that that request will be approved by cabinet. He's not saying anything has been submitted. The way the process works, if somebody has got a mining right and they selling or those rights are exchanging hands, they apply to the department for Section 11 of the MPRPA. That has not happened. I mean, we're dealing with media reports. We haven't received any request to that effect, which allows the minister, the department, to exercise its judgment and control over these exercises. And as we speak today, there's no application with regard to LIMDEC. And I'm going to comment briefly on the aspect of nationalization, and I'll ask Mr. Mabuza to come in and give further details on the matters relating to this transaction. But the concerns raised around the issue of nationalization and our strategic plan, and I want to draw from the minister's response to the question of nationalization. I think the minister has made it very clear that nationalization is not a government policy. As we speak, a government department's role and responsibility is to implement government policy. So you will not find nationalization in the strategic document. And that's how I'd like to respond to that issue. And then I'll leave Mr. Mabuza to say that he's clarity on the message. Chair, the feeling is that
I think, Honourable Members, let's go with the proposals made by Honourable Dexter and Honourable Soto, that we then give the department an opportunity to go back, familiarize themselves more with this development, and that give us the necessary responses. I think also it would be important that we write a letter of invitation to LIMDEC itself to appear before this committee so that they can see what it is and any other party interested, whether it be the community or any other, you know, organ of civil society that has an interest on the matter, to come and brief us on the issue. And it would only be proper that then we take it from there. For now, for the matter to find out so that we can connect first before we could attach this or that consideration to the issue. So I think for now we will leave it at that stage, that very soon we would want you, if there's any other interested party, to come and address us on this matter. But also let's just clarify, you know, let's put the record straight here, that this question is not arising because we are questioning the right of any citizen of the country to have an interest in mining.
whether those who have been players in the industry or those who seek to enter to the industry have equal rights. We cannot, as Parliament, you know, deprive citizens of those rights that are enshrined in our constitution. So, whoever the player is, none of us, the important matter to us is the prisoner and the fair, you know, arrangement on deals that are taking place and our interest in ensuring that biases must be towards the formerly disadvantaged and in this case, those mining communities. I think that must be clear, that the information was seeking to understand, you know, the entirety of the deal, but not targeting, you know, individual players in the court. But also, on the matter that was raised by one of the members regarding the question of nationalization of mines, I think the President of the country, in the main chamber of Parliament, responded and clarified the issue that there is no government policy as we speak on nationalization of mines. And may we add that also there is no ruling party policy on nationalization as we speak. Deliberations are taking place throughout the country on a number of issues, and therefore that is allowed because freedom of speech is basically guaranteed in our constitution. So people can raise issues that affect. Other people are today talking about bringing back, you know, the death penalty. That doesn't mean that it's a government policy. So yes, let people talk. Let them talk about nationalization, talk about anything. Until the point where there are proper discussions, and therefore policies formulated, then we will engage in even as this committee. So I just wanted to clarify that so that people, you know, must not be afraid. I know what the Honorable Schmidt is referring to in terms of the land situation. I don't know what are the details and the developments there, but I think you've answered correctly that in your sector, there's nothing towards nationalization of mines until such time that there are policies that are formulated to deal with the matter. Can we therefore part on that and, with that understanding that we will come back to the issue and get the absolute clarity with this link to this is the area so that we can then satisfy ourselves in terms of the development that are taking place. The only other last matter, Honorable Members, is that the last time Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mele, raised issues pertaining to water levels that are rising in some parts of the country. Apparently, the department has found wanting in terms of locating those locations. They would want to get more information in terms of areas that they know of so that they can then make a follow-up. They wanted to come
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I've had at least two phone calls from the Guru and from someone in the department. I did speak to the councillor. We did forward it. The emails kept coming back. I'll print it out and I'll give it to Ms. Guru. But for some reason, the emails didn't go through. I'm not sure why. But I'll print it out and I'll give it to
you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I thank Honorable and for the reporting in the department, most of them appointed me. Very well, was in which area, this and that, and almost everybody. But now, I don't know the area. I was just saying what I had, that it's in the farm. But I spoke to somebody who promised me to bring the area today, the list of areas. I haven't met him, but he said he has invented in the area. So I think that's something. Thank you.
Okay. No, I tell you that should suffice. Outside of the meeting, and then talk to the department in more specific. Honorable Member, very back to the business. When we attend, the department had some questions that they could not get to answer because of time situation. We would allow them to cover that point, and then also other presentations that they wanted to give us, because I think finance is correct, or any other, you know, additional you know, presentation that you would want to make, and then we engage. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson and Honourable Member. I think what we have done, we in the last discussion, we meticulously noted the questions. The Director General has responded to a number of them, but those that were not addressed, the different branches have prepared responses. I think in responding to that, they will just repeat the questions to give the context, and they'll cover the questions. Chair, I must say that on that day we had covered all the presentations, including finance, and we have prepared to engage with the questions as they come through. We didn't prepare any presentation, but we do have the previous presentations available in case there's a need for reference. Member of regulation.
Sorry. Honorable Member, is this thing bothering?
Yeah.
I can say.
Member of Regulation will address the question.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, the questions may not be 100% in the way they were asked, but our as we noted the questions, for example, question one was, what is the DMR doing in respect of the Westrand mine water issues? Now, this response is from a mineral regulation perspective. And our answer is that the regional manager mineral regulation for the Gauteng region has been instructed to instruct in turn all operational gold mines in the housing area to have their environmental management programs properly amended with special focus on water issues and water management. Now this process is currently in progress. So we as a DMR, we realize that there's a need and they need to focus on the water issues in more detail. Question two was, how is environmental liability and apportionment of such liability handled by the DMR? Now, the holder of every prospecting right or mining right is fully liable for the environmental impact within a prospecting or mining area unless some previously disturbed areas are very clearly excluded from the mining area, for which they then don't accept liability and responsibility, and those areas need to be very clearly identified on the proper sketch plan so that they are clearly identifiable. Now, negative environmental impacts caused by pollution plumes, for example, and this is something that I can just mention, it sometimes happens. The liability doesn't stop at within the boundaries of a mining area. We see it that if there is a pollution plume that stretches beyond the boundaries of a mining area, the polluter then is liable for that pollution caused. And then with regard to the apportionment of liability, that is a fairly complex issue. It mainly relates to water issues, for example, currently in the West Rand and the Witwatersrand Foundation, where companies negotiate and talk about who is responsible for what in the ratio, with how is the apportionment. So that is determined through investigation and research. Excuse me. Then question three, is the DMR aware of the living conditions at hostels in the Primrose area in Gauteng? Now, I've since then instructed the regional manager for the Gauteng region to investigate this matter, and there is a proper inspection photo scheduled to take place tomorrow in this area, and we will get the feedback and the report on that matter. Question four, can the committee have a breakdown of the number of rights granted in terms of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act per region? Now, honourable members, I have the figures here. First of all, I can read out the figures per region. The Eastern Cape region, as per yesterday morning, obviously since the implementation of the MPR, the 8-hour legislation, which is 1 May 2004, until yesterday morning, Eastern Cape 830, Free State 1528, Gauteng 1119, KwaZulu Natal 1574, Limpopo region 4393, Mpumalanga region 4700, Northern Cape 3433. Well, let me just make it clear here. If I say Northern Cape, it is the Springbok sub office, if I can call it like that, has its own area in respect of which it operates. So the Kimberley part of the Northern Cape office has 4,700 applications, and the Springbok office received 3,433 as of yesterday. Sorry, I just need to make it clear, Chair. It's 3,433 for the Kimberley area and 832 for the Springbok area. Northwest region is 4,509. And then the Petroleum Agency received 196 applications. And the Western Cape region, 1,000. Petroleum Agency is 196, and the Western Cape region is 1,096. Now, just for the information of the committee, we have a report here with the breakdown on the type of rights that were granted per region. I'd like to go to that detail.
Before you did mention and how many
mention that the report don't mention the commodity supply. It doesn't give detail on the commodity supply, for it's just a stat, but this report, for example, gives a breakdown by saying, for example, in the Eastern Cape, this uses as an example, in the Eastern Cape, new prospecting rights, 138, prospecting rights in renewal, 18, new mining rights, 179, new mining permits, 423, prospecting right conversions, 3, mining right conversion, 69, and then a total of 850. And just to give the committee indication of how many applications since the implementation of the MPRDA, as of yesterday, is 24,210.
I know that the information cannot get defined, but the interest would be around those who benefit from that. If you look in the Western Cape, for an example, it might be the previously advantaged cooking that you benefit from those mines, like sand mining and all that. You see, I'm saying this because I know of a situation where there was a wrestle between previously disadvantaged person and a previously advantaged person about the right to mine. So sometimes one would want to get closer to that teaching so that you understand how to people benefit, how to sections of our community benefit from those. You know. I don't know whether it's possible. I know it's too much of a teaching, but sometimes it's necessary.
Okay. Chair, can we know the content? Can we move to the next problem? My husband, thank you.
So are you going to give us copies of those tests? They have the report you are in. And I think honorable members, yes, let's deal with that. But I think the issues you are raising are very important, that at some point we would have to dig a bit deeper, especially when you brief us on the charter review process, to see whether there is a field transformation in the industry. I think the questions that arise will then more important and necessary for you to respond to. But also the other aspect is to understand how much of foreign ownership of our rights are there. We might sit here and think that we have got mineral assets in the country. Why? The rights have accrued to forest companies. 80% of these mines owned elsewhere by the multinational conglomerate. And the scenario that we would not definitely approve because these natural resources must benefit and be owned by indigenous people in the country. That means South Africans of all colors. So this foreign ownership is a matter that we must delve into quite seriously because the country can be held to that. But why you have a situation currently that there is this international litigation that is taking place at this speed, causing our legislation framework to achieve sovereignty. So all the matters that are very important in delving into. But we know now that your preparation in terms of information did not go to that extent. But I'm just forewarning you that when we deal with that aspect, we want to go deeper so that we understand.
I know it's in touch, but Honorable Speaker, Honorable McCaffrey,
Yes, Mr. Chair. I mean, why I'm asking, because it's clear the debate is an actual debate and it's a very relevant debate. And I know what the one debate for, let's say, nationalization of money. But I don't know what the figures are to counter that debate. How do I know that in social labor plans, 50% of them were ESPs, I think that was the labor social plan or employee plan, what's it called, ESP? ESOP. So that can counter the argument. I don't know how many people, how many communities have benefited by how many schools. I think you gave a rough indication last time. How many schools, how many clinics, how many exactly to count it, to say, but the communities do benefit. It's not just individuals. I regard for the DG's answer saying, but there should be individuals who benefit. Of course there should be individuals. But it should only be individuals who benefit, and certain individuals who benefit from, compared to other families and companies, you've taken more than 100 years to build up assets. Suddenly within 14 years, this individual goes from nowhere to become the richest person in South Africa. Now, that is a clear indication that the program or the process is not what it was intended to be. It cannot be. Because that's not the purpose of what I understand. The reasoning for BEE and all those kind of issues were meant to be. So how does one counter that, except if you don't have the stats, you don't have the figures. You can't indicate, if Mr. Mavula can't indicate that community got two schools and one clinic. But we don't know. Because either we don't see what's happening, or it's not been a requirement in that social labor plan. But somewhere along the line, we've got to get an indication, I think that's basically the question. Of these 24,000 applications that have been corrected, how many schools were required? What was the benefit to the societies within which they operated? Otherwise, we'll forever be in the dark about has this program succeeded? Is it doing what it was intended to do? Otherwise, it's a one-sided argument. That's how I see it from my point of view.
The number of houses. Currently, we are having
36 is applicable in the region, in the main region. The next question, Chair, was on how to ensure compliance at the mine. Currently, in terms of the provisions of the Act, the inspectors, they have power to either issue Section 54 or Section 55 instructions to the mines. And now, Section 54 instructions are issued to halt operations either at the mine or part of a mine where there's immediate danger to the health and safety. And Section 55 instructions normally will issue them where there's no immediate danger, but to ensure that there's compliance with the provisions of the Mine Health and Safety Act. Also, Chair, we have the power to make recommendations to the Director of Public Prosecution where we see that there's been a recurring or a serious transgression of the provisions of the Act. And also, the inspectors will be able to recommend administrative fines to a maximum of $1 million rand to ensure that it's compliant within the industry. The next question, Chair, was on the issue of the pregnant women. And on whether it was monitored by mines in order to establish when they are pregnant. In terms of the provisions of the Act again, the Act, it puts the onus on the employer or the owner of the mine to ensure that each employee goes to a medical treatment. In other words, they must do a medical examination for each and every person before getting employed or during employment as well to make sure that the particular individuals are equipped from work at the underground or surface environment. And over and above this provision of the Act, we have also embarked on a policy study that focuses on issues of health and safety regarding women in mining. This study also covers the issues of pregnant mining. But I must also add, Chair, that and we'll obviously outside the this meeting, if Mamu Gale could provide us with the I saw the number. Specifically indicated that there was a case where a woman was, yeah, was pregnant and was forced to go underground. So we'd like to also to do further investigation on particular the ground.
Okay.
Right. And the last question said was asked by Advocate Smith on the number of fatalities for last year. Provisionally for last year, we had 166 fatalities compared to 171 the previous year, which is 2008. And currently, a year up to date, that is 2010, Chair, we have 24 fatalities compared to 37. Fatalities during the same period last year, which is about 5% improvement year on year. Thank you.
So as we go on, numbers will rise in
Yes, we have identified it as a problem as well, where some employees, they either hire a pregnant for that particular issue of remuneration. There's a current process through the Mine Health and Safety Council, an advisory committee, which is MOHEC, which is mainly looking on health issues. They've been in a process of reviewing what we call the guideline on of fitness performance in mind. And one of the issues that they've been looking at is this particular issue. To say how do we really prevent this going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. That means you are monitoring that.
And Chair, just on the follow-up, I think, of the department, I think I need to comment on asking for further information. It's not to put members of parliament on the spot, but in our role with regulators and some of these issues when they come, we would like to investigate them further. I mean, there's a case we've been investigating where a woman reported to the president that this is what happened in the Rustenburg area, and we're able to have a full investigation that covers the human rights issues, labor issues, and we've written letters to the different departments to deal with the different aspects. So there is a problem. Women are hiding because they want to work longer, and it causes problems. The policy framework is in place. And as regulators, what helps us is when complaints come and we're able to investigate them and deal with the specific issues. So we ask for information in that context, not necessarily to say because you asked, you can tell us, but it's really to follow up on the issues. And the other point on the, that one I think it was well covered, but those were the two problems, Chair, that said outstanding questions. So if they have further questions, we'll be able to deal with it.
Thank you. Over to you, Honourable Member. Any other questions? Honourable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The I am aware of the fact that the review of the mining charge is being done by I think Chamber of Mines. I think the government, of course, and a few other stakeholders are involved. I'm not sure whether NEDLAC has been involved, but there's a number of stakeholders involved in that review. Is there any indication as to where we're heading? Is the department prepared to give an indication what the, at least in terms of timeline, when we can receive a report, I don't want to ask the most obvious question, but is it clear that the mining charge is served its purpose? Are we in for a substantive review of the mining charges? Because it has to be reviewed every 5 years. Does it appear that we might look at a review of the target? Or what are we looking at? Because there's not much coming through in terms of the process, except if it's being done very close notes. I'm not sure where we're heading. Whether the department might to, not that it has to, but I know one can't give an indication before it's been properly discussed and agreed to, etc. But is there any at least common cause indication between government and the sector, mining sector, which you would say these are common cause at this point?
Thank you very much, Chair.
I've got two questions on the program. One is the promotion of my health and safety. The first one would be on the
I wanted to ask, but slipped my mind. I also read in the newspaper, unfortunately for the DG, that he commented on an application by AEMFC, where it appears that AEMFC indicated in a statement that it would do an application. Then, the next moment, DGS, which is acting on behalf of the applicant, then indicated it was not withdrawn, and now it seems to be continuing again. So it's a very unsatisfactory state of affairs. What is the position at the moment? Is that application being withdrawn according to the department, or is it proceeding? Because there seems to be mixed signals coming through on that. Thank you.
Let's allow you to respond, and then we'll come back with the next round.
Thank you, Chair. If I can start with the last one, the easy one. I think the DG has clarified that, when the application was submitted, the department was not aware that those are winelands, and made it very clear that that application will not go forward. And I'm not going to go into what the company is saying, because in reality it doesn't matter. They don't approve the license. So from the department, there's a clear commitment of what will happen. The farming land, and there's a recognition of that. Mr. Mambusa will comment on the charter review, and the Mr. Zondi on the service level agreement with the QA, and I think the other question.
Honorable Chair, honorable members. The question on the charter review from Honorable Smith. We, having this completed, the charter intake assessment, and this is a report that we are now discussing with the mining business and the organized labor, and we are intending to discuss it further at the mining summit scheduled for the end of this month. And beyond which we will then have a will pronounce on the process going forward. It is our expectation that soon after the mining summit, we will then be in the position to go out and begin the process.
Did you say end of
this
month or end of next month?
End of this month. Thank you.
On the issue of the training of instructions, on an annual basis, the instructor is specifically on the regional side. Based on the risk profile, they will plan the total number of instructions and audits to make sure that this complies with the instructor. And now with the issue of TB ongoing, I think that we try to adopt a holistic approach on this. And the figures, research has indicated that probably 70% of the TB cases that we offer to them spoke of the minister. We are also involved in HIV and AIDS program, and not only looking at HIV and AIDS on our campus, but also to look at the effective and of the current that in this progress. And also the other issue that also impacts the TB matter is the living conditions as well. And I think the critical area is the Gaza, and it was also debated or discussed last week. And I think that we try to have a holistic approach in this particular. Thank you.
Chair, that covers the question.
Thank you very much. There are other questions that will be arising on our question.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I see that one of the documents we received this morning, and I don't think we've discussed it, is the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee DMR legislative program. My question is basically, I see the three goals on its way.
We're still coming to that.
Are we coming to that? Sorry.
We must be on that one. Hi. On your presentation, I think it is starts from page 2 onwards, where you set the target. For instance, in mineral regulation, the rights granted to HPSA, the target was 27, and the rights granted were 52. When you go down, basically it seems by more than 100% that almost every time the target that you set in actual, you know, achievement. Well, why would this be the case? I mean, have you chosen a route of conservatively planning for low numbers and your achievement simply, you know, so seems to throw you off in terms of the promotion of sustainable the matter is so important and closer to our hearts, but then the target is not just itself. It's not the support that in the process that you want to give to SME. And you said with those kind of small figures, you can never realize the objective of putting, you know, to good use. Coming to finances, the criminal health education seems to be also developing. But that's before going into those topics. In your allocation of funds, the plus a billion rand budget that you just received, you've, shall I say, disproportionately allocated mineral policy and promotion. Well, why is that? I don't want to assume whether you are looking at the issue of the owner of the material in mind, as mine is one of the major challenges in that program. But I think I just hear it from you, because it seems to be, we take quite a few chunks, even double the other problem. And indeed, when you go through to your target, you know, as well, and the outcomes that you are looking at, your target seems to be quite low. Throughout in your document, if you go to page 26, you know, for instance, you've got a reduction of the turnover, the staff turnover rate, which is understandable by 1%. Human resource development, 60%. This deals with the department itself, basically. And yet, you're planning for small numbers of workshops that will deal with core values within the department.
because the symptoms you're having before, going through in terms of your plan, your target, the things that are too low, and as a result, your resort allocation in terms of funding, your targets as well, become so low. For instance, if you go to stage four, promotion of health and safety, you know, you're targeting improvement of 10% in 2010, 2011, 2012, the number remains consistent, 10%, 2012, 2013, consistent, you know, 10%. Meanwhile, we have this serious challenge, even given the figures that you gave us now, of a number of people that, you know, died in the industry. You were saying for 160, for the past financial year. And also, what worries me most when it comes to occupational health strategic development, you look at the government, that one percent, 1%, 1%, you know, consistency through, you know, your main objectives on one hand are to achieve, you know, particular end results and outcomes. But when you look at your targets in terms of your planning and the resources that you allocate, to them, not talk to take it. For instance, again, on health, manage health and safety risk, again, they consistently plan, you know, 10%, which is an area that we believe requires some attention. So this could be true in some areas, yes, of course, you target it quite well, but then some of the numbers are not displayed, just 100. For instance, if you look at promotion of job creation, you just say 100. In the following year, 150. The next year, then, you know, 200%. We don't know what does this mean. Maybe it's because we didn't give you enough time to can then give us the background and unpack, you know, these figures for us. Follow understanding. When we were engaging you on your main objective, we want also to see that reflected on the allocation of resources to realize, you know, those objectives. Can we clarify?
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. If I can just start maybe with the last question, which I think was also raised in the week past, and the DG made a commitment that the 1st of April, the new structure will be implemented. And I think there was a specific request from the committee for the structure with names and contacts of people, and that will be made available. And just moving to the first concern raised by the Chair around targets on mineral regulation, a target of 27 and the actual of 152. And just as a general comment, I think we note the concerns raised by the committee around what we're reporting on, because it helps us to further refine how we measure ourselves. But specifically relating to this one, particularly on mineral regulation, often we're dealing with the feeder comes from outside. We can't predict how many applications we're going to get. So we look at the resource base that you have, and you look at the region. And currently, I think what was planned here was purely three rides per region, 9 times 3 translated to 27. But then you find that there's more applications coming through. I remember on the health and safety side, we often did simply respond to applications. How do you set the target? Complaints. You have to deal with them, but you deal with the complaints as they come. So you can't really set the target. You say, even in Section 54, Section 55, you can't really set the target that this year I'm going to issue 1,000 Section 54. It matters that happens as you carry the work. So we look at the resource and try and set a target, and sometimes you find that it's much, and probably the figures indicate that we're too conservative. Because when you set those targets, you look at what realistically you can do, but sometimes then you get more applications, and that is what is reflected in the report. And I think the different colleagues on the table will respond to the specific issues. I think there were more concerns on the health and safety. If they can respond to that, and also mineral regulation, I think Mr. Tina and Mike or Rosa will respond to the specific question.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. On page 34, on the improvement of compliance, the 10% means an improvement year on year. Let me just make an example. If the overall compliance in the money gets, let's say, past 70%, what you'll be looking for is like an improvement year on year. So it needs to go up year after year. And then the second comment was on the enforcement guidelines developed. And there was the one that, well, this is just the one guideline that was developed by the department. And then thereafter, we just have to review it and refine it as the environment changes. And I think that sort of applies to all sort of the targets as well. So you can see improvements year on year.
Chair, there seem to be, I think the feeling is that the questions have been addressed. I think in terms of targets, I've just given an overview of why the targets seem to be greater, but I think CFO will go deep into the budget, and then matter of regulation will come later.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable question that was raised on mineral policy and promotion. While that figure might look a little bit higher in comparison to other programs, the reason is that it's inclusive of budget allocations for public or other state-owned entities like the Council for Geoscience, as well as the Council for Mineral Technology or MinTech, which account for about 80% of that entire budget for the grant mineral policy and promotion. So effectively, the allocation for the grant itself in terms of the money that gets spent internally in the department is somewhere in the region of 20%. So it might look abnormal in comparison to others, but the part of the transfer goes to the end. Historically, when we were still DME, those entities used to be budgeted for under a separate program called Associated Services. But we've moved away from that now. We're linking the entities to the program to which they were.
And
the
main cabin what?
And Council of the Group.
What about
currently, the state diamond trader is not funded from the program.
I'm asking this because we have not approved the annual report of both state diamond trader at interest rate, precisely because even the auditor's report was the report is not the we said to call them back. Now, if you say you're get here, we make some provision. We're talking conservation, and we don't want to make our way from this thing. State demonstrator was made specifically to facilitate that. That if we don't find, then it will perpetually remain a problem challenge. So we want to know why. Are you aiming at closing it down? Because we received a letter from the association of the small diamond operator. Some of them, suggesting that rather let's review the law that is aimed at effective transformation, including the debt. So if you then do not allocate the process, you are basically helping that process that is to generate transformation in this particular aspect.
I'll address the one part of the respondent. If Mr. Mahuza can also come into assistance of the legislation. The key issue, Honorable Chair, with the state demonstrator is around the way in which we had invitation to operate. The intention was to set it up in such a way that it becomes a self-sustaining entity, which would derive its revenue from the sale of diamonds and make some profit margin out of that. We do, however, recognize that model has presented a number of challenges, and I think the recession also contributed significantly to the challenges that they've been having funding money. And we have then started the process of revisiting that model. There is a new business case that has been developed, and we're currently engaging with the colleagues around approval of that particular business case. So unfortunately, until the model is actually changed and approved accordingly, we cannot even approach National Treasury for funding the entity, because as it is currently, the model doesn't allow for state funding. However, in the previous financial year, looking at the challenges that they were having, we were able to intervene and assist them with an amount that they required to basically keep their operations going. So once that process of reviewing the model is completed, we can then begin to look at how much is required to keep the data in place.
Do you not see that putting U.S. college in cost with bodies such as COPA, for example? Because when you say you interview them as well as a request, it means you will spend money that you can for that purpose. We cannot, with our eyes open here, approve that kind of a process, which we know down the line is going to become a problem, where you are engaged on spending money on unbudgeted form items. And it should amount to internal attempts, whether it's spending, whether other terms that you use. But the first is, it's money you spend when you have not budgeted for it. It's not that you make a single issue, by the way. They demonstrate that there, by law. And it can't be that you wait until, well, currently, as we speak, there are problems. Been approached by the small players in the industry vehemently complaining about frustration as a result of lack of delivery by the state administrator. When you engage the leadership of the state administrator, they complain about funding. Now we want to be clear on that.
Then maybe just to give the committee comfort in terms of the intervention. We only intervened when it was clear that there was a crisis to be done. And there is a process that is provided for within the PSM. In the PSM, if you're wanting to introduce a new transfer payment, you then approach the National Treasury for specific approval in terms of the public finance. So we followed that process to the last. So we are very comfortable that even when the change comes, we can do that. There will be no one to follow us. Perhaps, I don't know if Nauza would want to come in terms of challenges.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The biggest challenge that we do know of the state demonstration on the project is indeed its financing model. And as CFO has indicated, we are working very hard in developing a business case, a new business case, a development case for the state demonstration, which will fundamentally change the financing model. We are engaging with that. But certainly the implosion of the global financial crisis pushed the space of the trader more to the negative, faster than we had anticipated. We were hoping that we would have resolved with the financing model. But we can give you assurance, Honorable Chair and the colleague, that we should be in a position to report back on the progress we have made with the proposition we have done.
Honorable
Chair,
thank you.
The regulator is funded under program direct under MENA regulation. Can indicate the reason. The regulator for the next financial year, the funding allocation for the regulator is sitting at 52 million. And that grows to 56 in the 2011 cost funding.
So,
and it goes down to 5. I think you made reference to the occupational health strategy budget on the health and safety program. I don't know, Mr. Can you maybe comment on the subject of 111? The issues, we've covered all the questions.
Priority areas. On health, I think you have
minerals inspector in total would you want to see so that you can be satisfied that the department is properly resolved? You break it down. So health inspector and the safety inspector. You know, the reason why we're raising this is because we can have wonderful laws that the current system to have. All legislation can work. Seems to be tight enough that it can assist us to achieve the objectives to doing that. But if you don't have mechanisms to enforce compliance, it becomes a challenge. If only the number of inspectors we have are responsible for the use to respond to accidents that occur. You know, you have other situations that arise, therefore you are not proactive. That's why we would want a situation where we are proactive. For instance, this thing that we talk about, the active development, we've seen that even from the relative level, that the president is just dropping an area unannounced, and define the state of the situation on the ground without anybody having prepared anything. Now, we want to see a similar situation from the department. That's a neural network that we know matter, because it's a matter of life of people that are at stake here. So that's why we want to be absolutely satisfied that you've made sufficient provision to capacitate your inspectors.
Thanks, Chair. I think the health and safety will assist us with that day. Thank you, Chair, again. If you look at the total, on the current total complement of the inspectorate, now it includes the mine safety, mine equipment, occupational health, and administration that goes with it. We are looking at about 360 folks, 316. And then the 36, Chair, the 36 figure is basically on the individual regional level, and basically for all the nine regions. We're looking at 36 folks on health inspectors. And then during this restructuring, we've tried to improve on that figure. It's almost double. We are looking at close to about 60 now total on health, of health inspectors. Obviously, as the CFO has indicated, the issue of recession as well, it has played a particular role on we should be really realistic in terms of the numbers going forward. But we are now and again we're engaging with the CFO and through them the pressure to try and assist us in that particular aspect. And Chair, I would also like to add that Northwest region is one of the biggest regions in terms of mining in South Africa. It employs a substantial number of people in the industry. So what we've also have done during this conference is to try and split the region itself into two. We are looking at having an office at Blackstock, which is it will be fully capacitated with the PI and the supporting inspectors and admin staff, and the same we'll be looking at the same model for the Rustenburg and the Gale. I think with objective check, as you've indicated, of having a better focus on both health and safety issues, and obviously having a balanced approach as well on both of the issues. Thank you, Chair.
I hear the sound outside.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
It means he is ready. Let's take 10 minutes. When we come back, we address other questions and then we move to the proposed legislation and come to that.
Discuss it, and when the bill comes, we're able to discuss the issues of the issues. There was another question now. It's the assurance. I've got that bill to the minister. One of the matters I needed to clarify, which escaped my mind, was the very EMT. I mean, currently, as the legislation stands, EMTs are not directly linked to the time frame. And I mean, we're busy with the amendment yet, but the commitment to 6 months and 3 months doesn't necessarily mean that we need to change the time frames in the law, because the law says within 12 months, within 6 months, so nothing stops you from doing it earlier. However, the license can be granted, and it only comes into operation when the EMT is approved. So EMT, the issue around time frame with EMT, that it's not directly linked to the licensing time. So I thought I must just clarify that.
It gives us hope that indeed going forward we are going to realize our common objectives in the sector. And I think the convention government here in terms of what we want to do. And thank you for being very open in terms of responses to the questions and
apology. I hasten to say that will not be welcome. That's a very good thing. That's a very good thing. Because you will have only that one bite. On the 23rd, we will submit that question. If you miss it, you have missed the question. We hope you will not be good. Because on the 23rd, you will go to the That's why I'm saying apologies will not be welcome. I'm not saying they will not be accepted, but I'm saying they will not be welcome so that your view can be included in what you are planning to do in the next 5 years. So that's an appeal I'm making to all of us to avail our knowledge and our expertise to the system.